Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's May 31st, 2013. You're listening to the best, longest-running PokerCast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
How you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm home.
Yeah.
Home sweet home.
Nice to be home.
Oh, man. It was only a 9-day trip, but it felt like 90.
Well, mine was only like a 6-day trip, and yet it felt like 9. And we'll get into that a little later.
But, you know, I'm the one that puts together the show, and I'm the one that's responsible for it being 7 hours every week, which I know you love. Mm. And I scour the web every morning as part of my routine. To find the most interesting poker tidbits to include in the show, right?
Yes.
And one of my big tools is I use Google News.
Yeah.
And you can set up little mini searches. So I've set up, just a search for poker in general.
Don't tell them all our secrets.
Well, it's not really a secret. It's all public stuff.
Why are they going to listen if they can find the news that you're finding for them? Don't tell them how you do it.
I'm not going to get the very interesting, humorous take on the news.
It's your brain that makes it fun.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. I set up I've got alerts set up for, not alerts, but searches set up for every state that has casino poker and poker. So like Florida poker, New Jersey poker, blah, blah, blah. So I run through those every morning and, educate myself on what's going on in the poker world, right?
Right.
Part of the problem in doing that is that Google is not a human yet. And it can't differentiate between poker, the game of poker, or sport, if you're so inclined, and other uses of the word poker. So every day there is some football GM playing poker with a player's agent, or a lawmaker is engaged in a game of poker, high stakes poker, over the healthcare bill. A bunch of BS stuff like that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Recently, though, I've noticed, and I've had no idea, but apparently there are tons of people in this country being killed by fireplace pokers every single day. It's some kind of epidemic that NBC needs to do one of those Now You Know or More You Know little PSAs on, because it's truly scary. I get on there, I'm like, oh, okay, Poker Stars deal scuttled, World Series Poker started, domestic disturbance in BFE, New Mexico, woman stabbed her live-in lover of 25 years with a fireplace poker.
Oh,
and this
man.
Stuff is happening like every other day in this country, Chris.
The more you know.
It's truly scary. You know, I was gone for 9 days. I get home. I'm like, honey, I love you. And when I'm hugging her, I'm kind of taking the fireplace poker, and I'm like hiding it under the couch because I'm like paranoid now.
Oh, man.
I would never thought of using that as an... I'm sure it's very effective. Obviously, it is. There are people dying every day in my newsfeed.
I'm glad I don't have a fireplace.
Yeah, I mean, I have when I live in Florida. Now I'm like, I never understood why I had a fireplace in Florida anyhow, but now... Let's just have a fireplace, no poker, honey. We'll just let that fire burn out.
Don't stir the fire.
Wow, it's scary.
So yeah, what, this apparently appears in your news feed like daily, really? Like somebody getting stabbed
almost
or poked?
Almost every day, lately. I mean, it hasn't always been that way, but recently I'm like, oh my gosh, I gotta put this on a show because it's frightening. And of course, you know, the way Google News displays it all, you almost always get the mugshot, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And... These are not pretty people killing people with fireplace pokers. These are not pretty people being killed by fireplace pokers. So just the fear inside of what's it feel like for a fireplace poker to pierce my gorgeous body, my gorgeous now slimmer body, is scary enough. But then I have these images, and at night when I fall asleep, these people are dancing around going, fireplace poker, fireplace poker. My eye. Oh, man, it is tough to sleep now.
Well, there's less of you to stab now, so that's sort of your defense.
I could probably move out of the way pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Just graze me, a little flesh wound.
I do remember that, too. I remember when I used to have that on my email. I had the RSS feeds, and I put poker in there, and I'm like, oh, that wasn't smart. If you just put the word poker, you're going to get this crap. But I thought it was more like sales things, like websites would come up that were selling pokers or something, not killing people with trying to make shish kebabs out of their spouses.
Well, it's true. That might be a new advertising stream for us, you know. Fireplace poker, perfectly designed for domestic violence.
The more
custom
you know.
Fitted to your hands. Well, I'll tell you, I don't know who it is that we want to stab with the poker, but there's a long list of it, right?
There is now.
You know, we had the gorgeously hilarious, very short, but as usual, show on the cruise, right?
Mm-hmm.
We had no idea what was in store for us the next day.
No, and it's funny because leading up to it, I was in total denial. I really was, because we had a lot of trouble leading up to this one. We'd heard that the port in Miami was pretty difficult, and I'm like, Scott, what are they going to do? Keep our tables? What are they going to do? They need the room on the ship. They're obviously going to let our stuff come off. Don't worry about it. We'll get the stuff. Oh, man. Silly Chris.
That's why you gave me the big bucks to worry.
Silly Chris, customs is for kids. So I really don't even know where to begin. I just know that it was a very hot morning.
Very hot.
You and I were supposedly the only ones on the security clearance sheet. So my wife, who was going to come home with me, and you were going to get on the plane to go to downstream, a little more on that later, she was going to come home with me to return the tables. But because you and I are on the list to go get the tables or whatever it was, you and I had to go get them. So she had to sit outside and wait for us outside the port, you know, by the terminal, and it was like 90 degrees, and she's all by herself, and so you and I are like, alright, well, let's just see what happens, let's go pick up the tables like we always do, we're on the list, we should be able to just go do this, and that's when everything kind of fell apart. Fell apart before it even started. It was remarkable, because, you know, when we went to drop the stuff off, it was like, hey, you know, we're Chris and Scott. We're from Andy Up Magazine. We were having the poker tournament on the ship, and we bring in our stuff. And guys like, I don't remember Andy Up. They ain't on the list. And I'm like, well, we should be on the list. We hired a company to tell you we're on the list and put us on the list, and we got all of our paperwork, and we were pre-cleared. And, well, let's keep looking. So, of course, on the last sheet, they used the name of the truck that we rented rather than the name of our company. So they found us way at the end of the list. I'm like, okay, sure, right, we're on the list. Right, so this isn't going to be a problem. We're okay to go. So it really wasn't eventful getting this stuff on the ship, which was another thing that they told us. They said, oh, that won't be a problem. Getting it on the ship is not a problem because they don't care what you're giving away. It's what you're taking off when you come back from visiting other countries and other parts of our country. And then so we go back to the same booth to pick up our stuff. And we're like, yeah, we're Chris and Scott, and it probably says the name of the truck rather than our company, but we're on the list. And the guy's like, you're not on the list. And we're like, no, give us a sheet. We're on the last page. You know, Scott grabs the sheets from the guy, and he's thumbing through it, and I'm doing my best charming to the guy, you know, hey, you know.
Yeah, we had no hope. I'm in charge of trying to find us on the forum, and you're in charge of charm.
And finally, you're like, yeah, I'll see it's on the list. I'm like, I'm the editor of the magazine. Give me it. I'll find our names. You're just scanning like you're looking for pokers. And so I grab the list, and sure enough, we are not on the list. And I'm like, you know, we got 10 tables and 4 bins full of tournament and cash chips in there. We need to get our stuff. So the guy's like, all right, we'll get you an escort, you know, because you don't have your TWIT card and all that. And so he's like, go park down there by the second trailer and just wait there till the escort comes. And I'm like, oh, this isn't going to be good. So Scott and I are in this truck, and the escort comes about an hour later, and he's like, you got this form? And we're like, no, we don't need that form, because we were doing it this way, and we hired these people, told us we didn't need the form. He's like, you need this form. And Scott's like, no, we don't. And Scott starts losing it, and I'm like, this is customs or whatever, just calm down a little bit. And so this guy proceeds to tell us that we need something that we didn't really need, or that we already did have, but he didn't have it for some reason. And we ended up sitting in that truck for almost 5 hours after that.
So we're laughing about it now. We didn't think we were going to be laughing about it now.
Oh, man. So it gets to the point where Scott's like, I'm going to miss my flight. And I'm like, all right, dude, here's what's going to happen. I can't let my wife sit out there any longer in this heat and all by herself. And I don't care what happens, but I'm going to go get my wife now. And he's like, yeah, we got to go. So we go and get Jeannie rather uneventfully. The guy said we can go do it and come right back. Didn't matter. So we go to get her, and I'm like, all right, Scott, we're going to take you to the airport. Jeannie and I'll take care of this, you know, because you can't miss your flight. That's just, we just can't have that happen. So the truck that we rented is only for two people. So Scott has to, like, squat down in between the bucket seats, and he's down, like basically on his butt or on his knees, and he can't even see over the windshield. You know, so I'm like, all right, I'm taking it to the airport, and then when we get there, you know, I'll hustle back. And by the time I get back, because what happened was we were about to get our escort, and they said, oh, the escorts went on lunch break. So we're like,
from government work.
Are you kidding me? Oh, they're not coming back till 1 o'clock. Now, mind you, my day started at 5:07 a.m. and we literally got there like 8:30. So now he's telling us that they're not even coming back to be an escort to bring us down to the port until 1. So at this point, it's like 12:15. I'm like, no problem, Scott. I'll scoot you over to the airport. I'll come right back. He's like, cool. So we get into the truck. Scott's squatted down. We're laughing. We're going past the security guy. We're getting on the highway. We're driving up, and I'm following the signs to the airport. And I pass 95, and I'm on this back state road or whatever it is. And I'm on my way to the airport, and like, we've been driving for about 15, 20 minutes now. We're almost there. And I'm like, all right, Scott, so which exit is it? You know, and you're like, well, I can't see. I'm like, well, you got your GPS, whatever. And you're like, we can't be there yet. And I'm like, yeah, we're right there. There's the exit. And you're like, not Miami Airport. I'm like, what? No, I'm flying out of Fort Lauderdale. I'm like, oh, my God. Are you kidding me? You're like, no. I'm like, I have no idea where I'm going, Scott. I'm going as far as the size of Miami Airport. Scott's like, no, we're going to, and I'm, so now we have no idea where we are, because now we got to turn the truck around, and there's no way we're going to go to Fort Lauderdale Airport and then find my way back from Fort Lauderdale Airport and then get the equipment, and I'm not going to get home till like 10 o'clock at night. So I'm like, you know what, Scott, I'm making an executive decision. We're going to turn the car around, go back to the port, get a cab, and you can we'll pay for the cab. And you're like, yeah, we got to do that. So somehow we get back to there pretty quickly. You get your cab, I get back down there, and the guy lets me through with Gene, which was hilarious. I thought, you know, all this big security, you know, whatever, and they just let me go right through with my wife, a totally different person that I went through and cleared before. They just let me go right through with her. I'm like, okay, so where's the big secret here that, you know, these guys are making this big deal out of it, but then they let me and my wife go right past them, you know, and we could have done anything to the truck when we left. We could have, you know, gotten some explosives, or, you know, they didn't check. They just let us go right through. So you and I are, like, texting each other back and forth. And so what happened when you got to the airport?
Well, yeah, it turns out it was a very good executive decision to take the cab, because the cab, who really wasn't in a hurry to get there anyhow, but probably just by this... the size of the cab versus size of the big lurking truck.
Yeah.
Even at his driving Miss Daisy pace, probably got me to the airport quicker than you could have.
Right.
And I got there literally like 15, 20 minutes before my flight was supposed to take off. 4,000 people in the security line.
Man.
And, you know, so I like to be one of those people that gets right through the security lines, particularly when my flight is ready to take off.
Yeah.
So I've already got my belt off and all that stuff, and my pants are falling down to my ankles. I'm trying to hold them up. I've got my backpack on, and then you're texting me, Scott, our stuff's still on the ship. I need to get a hold of someone. So I'm trying to text with one hand, hold my pants up with the other one, trying to get through security so I don't miss my flight. There's a lot of stuff going on. But eventually, I got through in time enough to get on my plane. By the time I got through there, you'd made contact with the ship, and everything ended up finally working out. But gosh, you know, when people ask, "Hey, it's so cool that you guys have your own poker cruise company," I always say, "Yes, it is," but it is an extremely hard way to make a few extra dollars. And if anybody out there thinks that we're making bank off this thing, let me clarify that right now. Doesn't happen.
No.
And certainly, it takes a very special kind of person to go through all the crud that we had to go through leading up to the cruise, and then certainly this kind of stuff. It was funny then, because I'm on Facebook. Oh my gosh, I almost missed my flight because of this. And then some of our cruise passengers were Facebooking and texting me back. Hey, what happened? I walked right off the ship.
So did we.
I'm like, yeah, that was the easy part this time. Good thing you didn't have 10 poker tables.
And so while I'm there, Jeannie and I waited at least another hour and a half before the guys actually got the stuff off. And then when the stuff came off, I was like, oh my God, it's here. And then first they brought 7 tables out, and then they brought the bins, and I'm like, wait a minute, we had 10 tables, but they just had there was 3 more tables, so I was like, oh, they put stuff on the truck, and I get into the truck, and the escort guy who had brought us over the first time and the second, second time, so he's like, yeah, don't leave, though, don't leave till I sign you out, and I'm like, okay. I got all my stuff, and I'm sitting in the car, and I'm waiting for this guy to come back, and he's not. And I looked at Gene, and I said, you know what? I'm getting ready to go. So I was like, hun, there's a restroom over there. Do you need the restroom before we go? Because it's a 5-hour trip, and I don't know where we're going to stop when we get to Alligator Alley, and blah, blah, blah. And she's like, yeah, let me go use it. So when she goes to use it, I get out and, you know, watch the door. I don't want some creep going in for my wife. So as I do that, one of the guys who had the guy who originally gave us the original guff about this, saying we needed the form that we didn't really need, but he came out, and he's like, Here's the form you needed. Look, here it is right here, signed. And I'm like, something's not right here, buddy, but whatever. I said, can I leave? He's like, yeah, you can go. You're all set. So I ended up not just leaving on my own, but once you came out of that restroom, if I didn't see that guy, I was leaving. I didn't care. I had my stuff, and there's no, you can just go, you know what I mean? And the guy wasn't going to stop me, and sure enough, when I got to the gate, the guy opened the gate up, and I went right out. So, yeah, and then after that, I had a 5-hour ride. So my day started at 5:07 a.m., and it ended at 5:07 p.m., and all we did was wait for tables and unload them. And I actually didn't even get to unload them in our facility. I had to do that the next day. So that was just pure waiting and driving. That's all that was. So it was a really long day to make, like you said, not a lot of money. So not a fun end to that cruise. And you can see it starting to come apart during the show last week when people kept trying to come in. You know, you're like, all right, the honeymoon's over. You know, because we had a great lead up to all that. You know, the equipment got there early for us, and it's like, wow, this is going to be great and everything. And then the wheels start to come off right after that. So yeah, I'm sure later on the show we're going to promote our next cruise, but I don't know why we're going to do that.
Well, it's never a problem for our passengers. It's just us.
Yeah, no.
Us honeybee workers.
Of course.
That go through it. All right. Well, real quick before we move on to the hotline, I just want to give a quick shout out to all of our listeners that participated in that online charity tournament a couple weeks ago, right before our last cruise. That was spearheaded by our good friends at Blue Shark Optics. I didn't last terribly long, but it was fun to play online again. I need to get more into more of the Papes events when I can. But I just want to let everybody know that I appreciated you playing. I know we had a bunch of listeners play, and the young woman that we were raising money for actually raised enough money to buy her hearing aid.
Excellent.
And was, using it a couple days after the tournament, and put a very heartfelt thank you on Facebook to everyone that she could hear her grandfather for the first time.
Oh, very cool.
So,
very cool.
You know, it's you know, you think about these charities, and you know, you always think about these really big charities, you know, American Red Cross or the MS Society or cancer or whatever. But I think it's really interesting when you can help one single person just dramatically improve their life.
Sure, because you get to see it. You know, a lot of that stuff, you know, okay, we donate that much to do it, but then you don't know the effects. You don't feel the effects. You don't,
right,
a lot of times.
Yeah.
And in this, it's one person telling you to your face, essentially, on Facebook, thank you for helping me. I'm listening to my grandfather, you know, and that's really cool. That makes you feel really special. And that's why a lot of people get into the whole charity, to get in the field and see the differences they're making and helping. And so that's kind of cool. Very good. Well, our hotline is 813-448-1120. You use it. You send it. You whatever we use it.
You send us something.
That was cool though. You used the line. I still could have corrected it somehow. You know, you use the hotline, and maybe we'll give you something cool. But here comes Mr. No Swag.
Found it kind of humorous that you were having a good time at the expense of the new Carnival. On how many different ways are we going to award people for winning a main event? This coming from the newly formed Ante Up Poker Tour, where you get your picture on the cover of the magazine. Huh. Maybe a little bit of the old pot calling the kettle black situation.
All right, point taken.
Not even close, though. It's not the same thing. I'm sorry.
I was going to get there.
All right.
I'm giving him a small point before we shred him. No, we're not going to shred him. It's a different thing, though, isn't it?
We were talking about jewelry.
We're insular here. Maybe we're just like too close to it. But
I was talking about the different types of jewelry they were coming up with. Why does it have to be a medallion? We're giving away a bracelet. That, you know, we didn't come up with some nose ring or ankle.
A nose ring, that's awesome!
Or anklet, you know what I mean? We came up with this, give him the bracelet, but we'll put him on the cover too, you know? I mean, that. Oh, man. Mr. No Swag, I think you just like to make fun of us. That's what it is.
And we appreciate when people like to make fun of us. I'm definitely going to put together a poker tournament where you win a nose ring now.
Yes.
That's some good stuff there.
And they have to have it done at the table. The piercing company. They'll be the sponsor, right? The local tattoo piercing company will be the sponsor of the tournament. And they'll put the nose ring right on you when you're... And that'll be the picture on the cover of the magazine, too.
The boy dribbling down your mouth.
That's right, as it's jamming into your nose. Little stud. See, there you go, too. That's the tournament. The tournament has to be stud. Get it?
Oh, I love it.
stud nose ring tournament. Ante Up's first stud nose ring tournament.
All right, Mr. No Swag. I know you keep telling us we haven't given you swag. We keep trying to give you swag, and you don't take it from us. So, still no swag for you. But everybody else, call the hotline at 813-448-1120. And if we use your call on the show, we'll send you something absolutely fantastic, like Pot Odds Made Simple. That's a great seminar from poker instructor Thomas Gallagher. It can be downloaded to any mobile device, and you can get your own by mentioning Ante Up at poker911.net.
Well, our mailbag is lengthy, but I'll read it since you're going to be talking a lot later. So trying to give the Ante Up Nation a balance of our voices for the week.
I like it. Very smart.
This comes from Brett Coonan. He says, I stumbled upon the Ante Up PokerCast this past December. Honestly tell you that finding the PokerCast has been one of two major events that have an enormous positive impact on my poker career. The first is reading Lee Jones' book, Winning Low Limit Hold'em, in the mid-90s. Can't agree with that any more than possible. That's just an incredible book. He said, the Riverboat Casinos began opening in St. Louis in the early 90s while I was in my 20s, and I quickly gravitated to the poker rooms. At some point, I decided to purchase Lee Jones' book, and reading that book opened my eyes to how horrifically poorly I had been playing. That book gave me the knowledge, using the basic fit-or-fold strategy, to becoming a winning player in the low-limit games. In 2001, I got married and my son was born. My poker career was put on hold. Fast forward to December 2012, when I found the Ante Up PokerCast. Your shows, especially the Hand of the Week and O'Malley's Move segments, have been incredibly helpful in teaching me how to play no-limit cash games and tournaments. Maybe it's that our poker backgrounds are quite similar and that we're of the same generation, but everything about Ante Up really speaks to me. Anyway, I spent the week between this past Christmas and New Year's Day playing a ton of poker. I utilized strategies that I learned from you guys, such as putting opponents on ranges, making c-bets, and floating. That's me. That's all me right there, floating.
Yeah, I never float.
I don't
even float in my pool. I just stay around the pool.
Now that you're losing weight, you might float, but actually fat floats. So, all right, so he says, I began beating the no-limit cash games and cash in two tournaments. Since that time, I've made the final table of a $500 event at the Heartland Poker Tour in St. Louis, won a few daily tournaments at Hollywood, and I've built myself a nice bankroll. I don't get to play nearly as much as I'd like because I'm a single dad now, so it's tougher than ever to find the time. I'm praying for Missouri to legalize online poker. What I'm trying to say is thank you, Scott and Chris. You've got yourself a loyal new member of the Ante Up Nation. I'm a believer. Thank you so much for the guidance that I truly needed to resurrect and redefine my poker career. I plan to get out and play in an AUPT event soon and eventually one of the Ante Up Poker Cruises. Thank you, thank you, thank you. See you at the tables. Very, very nice.
Whoa.
Just when I thought no one was listening.
Yep. Yeah, we just need to find one listener every December that has that kind of effect.
Keep it going. You know, and it's rare for someone to say that they appreciate the hand of the week.
Yeah, absolutely.
That never happens. All we do is get made fun of for the hand of the week.
Brett, I'm going to tell you right now, you might be the first person whose game is actually improved by listening to Chris and I break down hand of the week.
Is it because he does the opposite of what we say?
It could be.
I mean, it's
very
crazy.
Well could be. Yeah.
Crazy.
Or maybe it's 95% of his success is because of O'Malley.
Yeah.
And 5% is, you know, because of the blind squirrels getting hand of the week once in a while.
Doing what we don't do, or don't do what we do do. That's a lot of do-do.
but I really honestly cannot recommend Lee Jones' book more highly than any that he already has here. I mean, it's the absolute easiest book to read.
Yeah.
Which is huge for me. I mean, there's so many of these poker books that I get. I mean, we get a ton of them here. I mean, everybody writes a book, sends it to us, hoping that we're going to review it and talk about it. And I'll get through a chapter and I'm just lost. You know, it's too complicated. But
right.
Lee's book is just so easy to understand. And again, you don't have to play low limit hold'em to get the concepts in there. I mean, it really does help you with all your stuff. So I'm quite certain that was a much bigger effect on Brett than we were. But it's nice to hear that he thinks that we've helped.
Yeah, and you know that when somebody's listening, it makes it easier to do the show, too. So, Brett, thanks for making it easier to do the show this week.
All right, Brett, and thank you again for sending that wonderful email. We are going to send you an uncut sheet of J-Design playing cards, the official playing cards of Anti-Up. Pick up your own decks in the Anti-Up store at antiupmagazine.com/shop. And J-Design has begun a second attempt at getting Kickstarter funding for his new line of cards. Please, please, please support this great company. He's a little sole proprietor out there, kind of living the dream like Chris and I are. And if you guys could find your way to give him a couple extra bucks to help him out, I know he would definitely appreciate it. He certainly does a ton for our show and all of our listeners.
Okay, so speaking of the cruises, Lee Child is going to be our onboard pro for the Anti-Up Poker Cruise October 20th to the 27th out of New York City metro area. The 7-night cruise sails to Bermuda, and Lee is going to do his most expansive poker training ever on a cruise, 2 separate tournament and cash game tracks, each with 5 one-hour classes. And in December, don't forget, we're sailing from Tampa to Mexico and Grand Cayman, all in the same trip, by the way. It's not 2 separate trips. Get all the details on both cruises, including how you can win your way on board at Dover Downs and Texas Hold'em Poker Tours at antiupcruises.com.
And remember, we've expanded the number of Anti-Up logo items available for sale, including jackets, shirts, hats, and more, and consolidate all of our shopping items, subscriptions, single copies, cruises, and products from our trusted partners into one website at antiupmagazine.com/shop.
And I'd like everyone who's listening, if they have a Facebook account, to follow us, like us. Follow us on Twitter if you're a Twitter guy or a woman. And if you're not, what are you waiting for? You know, get with it. Get on Facebook, like us, get on Twitter. Also, if you already are on Facebook and you already do like us, write something really nice about us and tell your friends to like us too. We could use the numbers. Same with Twitter. Start following us, man. We need to boost our numbers. We're more popular than that. Come on, help us out. All right, what's going on, Anti-Up News Desk? I feel like we've been away too long.
We have been away too long.
Okay, good.
The World Series of Poker has announced its circuit schedule earlier than usual. Action kicks off in early August at Foxwoods in Connecticut and continues through May, where the national championship will be held next year in Atlantic City. As part of it, assuming regulatory approval, will be an online event.
Yeah. Okay. Online event. We'll see. It's funny, because you just know that Harris is like, yep, we know it's going to happen for us. You know, we're going to make it happen. So, it'll happen. I don't know when, but it'll happen. You know. It's just a matter of time. Because they're already, you know, it'll probably be a Nevada one or something, but it'll happen, right?
Oh, yeah. I think they're on track to launch in New Jersey by the end of this year. So you've got a couple more months after that for them to work out the kinks on it. And even if it takes a little longer. We're talking almost an entire year from now before they're going to have this online event. So
would it be the Atlantic City? Would it be a New Jersey event? Or would it be a Nevada online event?
Well, it depends on whether there's a compact reach. That might be pretty ambitious. I'm gonna assume right now it's just gonna be a New Jersey only.
Oh, okay.
And I don't remember off the top of my head whether New Jersey is one of the states where you just have to be in the borders or whether you have to actually be a resident.
Uh-huh. So okay.
Different story. But yeah, if they work out some kind of compact, then yeah, it would be a multi-state event, which would be pretty cool.
Crazy. Okay, a Superior Court judge had ruled against PokerStars in its quest to complete its purchase of the Atlantic Club Casino in Atlantic City. The owners of the Atlantic Club, which had already accepted almost all of the purchase price from PokerStars, are now free to negotiate with new suitors for the financially troubled resort. I just don't get it. What happened here?
I think what happened here is online poker happened.
That's not right, though. It's not right. You said you wanted to sell your club when you did. We said we wanted to buy it.
Yeah, well, I know we have a number of lawyers that listen to the show, and I am going to assume they're going to agree with me when I say this is why you have contracts. Mm. And for obviously, it was not PokerStars' fault that they were not able to get their gaming license in time, but that was in the contract, and that gives you an out, and the Atlantic Club pounced on it.
Man.
Said, hey, we can get a lot more for this resort now that we can do online poker. Thank you for the money you've given us. Oh, by the way, we want the rest, too, by the way. And then we're going to jack the price up and see what more we get for it. So, and it might still end up, well, I was talking to some folks on the cruise about this, too. It could still possibly be sold to PokerStars, just probably at a higher rate. But we just don't know right now. I haven't heard of anybody else really inquiring about it, so... But again, it comes down to that's why we have contracts, and that's why some of us hate contracts, and why some of us love contracts.
Yeah. Crazy.
And finally, Jamie Gold is the latest World Poker Champion to put his championship bracelet on the market. Heritage Auctions will auction off the piece of poker history on August 1st.
So, is it one of those where we need the money? Or is it one of those where we're donating it to charity? Or do we know?
Well, if it's charity, that certainly didn't come out right away. Yeah. Actually, there hasn't been a lot of details that I found since the story broke a little bit ago. I think if it was charity like the Peter Eastgate, then I mean, you put that front and center.
Yeah.
That changes the story dramatically. He won a ton of money in this thing. I mean, no one's won more money other than no one's won more money in the main event, I should say.
Right.
That Jamie did. Obviously, that's been several years ago. So I'd hate to think that he needs it for the money, but, you know, it could just be, you know, sometimes these things don't have the same value to people as they would to other people, you know?
I can't understand why somebody would want to buy these things.
The other question.
I just don't get it. I have the bracelet. You didn't earn it. I guess it's a collector's memorabilia kind of thing, maybe, but even then, it's kind of like... cheapens it to me. I just don't get it.
You know, I know some of our listeners would disagree, but I don't really have a strong desire to see someone's World Series bracelet. Hmm. I mean, one of our listeners that won one of the World Series events a couple years ago, and we met up with him. I mean, that was kind of cool because I kind of, you know, we didn't really know him, but we knew he was a listener, and, you know, hey, I wanted to see a bracelet when I was on him. But, you know, my life wouldn't have been dramatically worse.
Right.
Had I not seen that bracelet. So, you know, it's not like, you know, I went to part of this trip, we'll talk about it later, I went to Branson, I went to Ripley's Believe It or Not Museum, and this guy bought up all this crazy stuff, right, and now charges $18 for idiots like me to walk through and go, ooh, ah. I don't think I'm going to ooh and ah at a World Series bracelet.
Yeah.
It's not that important to me to go see it, so, and for the amount of money that someone's going to have to pay to buy this, I just don't know what to do with it at that point.
I mean, the face value of the actual, just the jewelry itself is probably a decent chunk, but not what they're going to charge for this thing.
Yeah, certainly not what it's going to go for an auction number.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, hey, to each his own. So,
no, that's right.
It makes somebody's life better by owning a bracelet that they didn't win, and makes other people's lives better for seeing a bracelet that they otherwise wouldn't see because it's not owned by Jamie Golden now, and it's owned by some other dude. Hey, what a country.
Well, I mean, isn't all collecting that way? I mean, when you think about the rarity of a piece of cardboard that got printed in 1908 that had the face of a baseball player on it, and now it's worth a million. I mean, it just makes no sense. It's a piece of cardboard. You know,
I was thinking about that because I was driving at some point in this trip. I think I was driving back to the airport, and I passed a comic book store.
Mm.
And they had a big sign outside, "We buy comics, top dollar paid." And I'm like, gosh, I wish I had comics. And no disrespect to people like comics, because that's everybody has their own hobbies and they love it, but it's not me. And to me, it's just, you know, I mean, hey, it's the same size as one of Randy at magazines. I've got 100 of those here.
That's right.
And when you take those in, you pay top dollar for that. That now we're talking business.
Well, you know, they're on eBay. We've seen them on Amazon and eBay, so they're there.
But you're right. It's just that it's an intrinsic value. We all put different values on different things.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. Okay, well, we got a brand new O'Malley's move. Let's get to it.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we're back at our brand new Dealer's Choice home game. And once again, we find ourselves in the 50-cent, $1 crazy pineapple round. Again, it's a short six-handed table. The end of the gun, a loose passive player, calls the buck with $50 behind. It's to us in the MP with the Ace of Diamonds, Queen of Diamonds, Queen of Hearts. A very good starting hand, we're going to raise and account for the limper. We've got about $75, and we make it $4 to go. The cutoff folds, but the button calls. The blinds fold, and the under-the-gun calls as well. The button is an aggressive player that likes to speculate. He likes seeing lots of flops, but can release a hand if he feels he's beat. He sits with 100. There's $15 in the pot, and the flop comes the King of Spades, Jack of Diamonds, Seven of Diamonds. Once again, we've got a decision to make, though it isn't very tough. The under-the-gun checks, and we decide to lead. We don't like the king, but we do like the inside straight and flush draws that we've picked up. We bet $10. The button thinks for a while before calling, and the under-the-gun calls as well. The under-the-gun quickly pitches a card into the muck. We release our Queen of Hearts, and the button seems to have an easy decision as well. There's $45 in the pot. We've got about $61, and the turn is the Seven of Hearts. We don't like this, but we can check, since the under-the-gun checks, and surprisingly, we're seeing a river for free. The river brings the Nine of Diamonds. The under-the-gun once again checks, and we decide it's time to fire. We make it $25 to go, and after thinking for only a short minute, the button taps us. The end of the gun quickly mucks, and it's back to us. What are we going to do?
All right, as we mentioned at the top of the show, immediately we got off the cruise and we suffered in the very hot, sweltering air conditioning of our Penske truck for 4 hours. I actually got on an airplane and flew out to Oklahoma. Yeah, man, what a doozy of a trip I had. I mean, it's almost like you and I were trying to one-up each other.
Yeah.
On whose day got more miserable after we left. I mean, certainly you had to deal with a couple more hours of crap and crud there and drive home and all that. I got on a plane, and then I got to Dallas. And so I was in the airport there, and I was still, like, just fuming and aggravated and everything about the customs thing, right?
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there and I look up and my flight to from Dallas into Springfield was delayed, and then later delayed again. And then I'm sitting there in this TGI Fridays, right, having craptastic dinner by myself, just wanting to be anywhere but where I was. You know, and I think I mentioned this a little bit on last week's show. You know, one of our podcast listeners was like, Scott, you know, how do you do all this travel? And I'm like, yeah, you know, I love it. It's really enjoyable. Sometimes it gets old, but I love it. And that, nothing's like that's changed. But I tell you, when you had a bad day on the road, you never feel more alone than that.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in that TGI Fridays near tears, mostly because I was in a TGI Fridays, I think. But I just wanted to get anywhere where I was, right? And so the flight was delayed yet again. I'm like, oh, my gosh, this is brutal. Get on the plane, and then we taxi out, and 18 planes in front of us on the runway. Pilot comes on. Hey, they just closed the airport.
Oh,
heavy rain's coming through. We're just going to have to wait it out here because there's no gates for us to go back to. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. And then about 15 minutes later, he's like, hey, another plane just took off. We're going to try it. He tried it. Woo! Scariest flight of my life. Lightning everywhere, rain, the plane was like being tossed around like a pinball, and I'm like, this is going to be the shittiest day for me to die.
I'm not going to beep that out, because I want to get sincere reaction to you.
It was absolutely, definitely sincere in that But anyhow, we landed peacefully in Springfield, Missouri, so everything is happy, right? I was headed up there for the, of course, the four-state poker championship Antioch Poker Tour event at the lovely Downstreet Casino Resort. Got there. Unfortunately, the turnout wasn't what we were hoping for. But regardless, it was a fun event. And as I mentioned, it's a really beautiful property. I always enjoy staying at Downstream. So got to kind of run through a little bit of that. And then I did a little traveling around Oklahoma to some of the other rooms. So kind of give you a little travel guide here.
Hey, let me ask you, when you were on the plane, did you have, you know, like a Bloody Mary dumped on you?
I did not.
So good. I can still one-up you a little bit there.
Yes, it was not the worst flight ever. You had the... but I will say on the flight out to Dallas, though, was the first time in years that I was able to recline my seat. Because I think there's nothing more offensive on an airplane than people that recline their seats. We have 3 square inches, and you're going to take that by thinking you're on a Barca lounger? No, doesn't work. But I was in the very last row, so I wasn't inconveniencing anyone. Poof, back it up. Ah.
Hey, was it that hobby airport you were you at Dallas-Fort Worth?
No, Dallas-Fort Worth this time.
Yeah, see, the only time that I've ever been stuck on a tarmac because of weather in my entire flying career where they shut the airport down was Dallas-Fort Worth.
Yeah.
Isn't that weird? We were going to Hawaii, actually, and we were stuck in Dallas-Fort Worth in the lightning, and they're like, you can't get on the plane. And then when we're on the plane, you can't get off the plane because of the weather, and they literally shut the place down. And we did just like you. I sat in that plane for like 3 hours, and it was the same airport. That's weird.
Well, you know, it's just this time of year for bad weather there.
Yeah, I guess.
And certainly I'm not going to compare my flight from hell to the tragedy that happened a couple of days before I got there. But,
oh, no.
You know, certainly... this tornado in Oklahoma City was on everyone's minds while we're out there. And, you know, Oklahoma City is about probably a good 3 hours from Downstream. But, you know, if you've been to Oklahoma, you know that's not very far.
Right.
You know, there's some parts of this country where people get in the car for 6 hours and it's like us in Florida going 20 minutes.
Yeah.
I'll be there 6 hours, no problem. I'm like, what? But definitely it had an effect throughout the state and actually the whole region. And even more so, I think, for the folks at Downstream. I think folks that listened to the show for quite a while, the last time I was in Downstream was right after that Joplin tornado that was vicious had come through. And a little geography lesson, if you're not aware, Joplin is really right next door to Downstream. Downstream is actually in Oklahoma, but it's right at the corner of a couple states, which we'll talk about a little bit more. And most of the people that work at Downstream live in Joplin. You know, I remember I was up there, the poker manager at the time that was taking me on a tour there said, you know, they did lose a couple team members in that tornado. Lots of team members lost family members or friends. Several of them lost homes. So, you know, that whole memory is still very fresh in folks' minds there. And certainly I think that cast a pall over the event. And, you know, Downstream, I want to give them a good shout-out for their generosity, of course. They donated a good number of our event T-shirts to tornado victims and also filled up at least one truck full of supplies to send down to victims, maybe more. But they certainly take that stuff very seriously there. And it's just unfortunate that it happened. And hope those people affected are on the road to recovery very soon.
We got to stop sending you to Oklahoma, though.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you. I don't think they're calling me in there.
No, every time you go, something like this happens just before you get there. So maybe you should stop going there.
Oh, man. But in the face of the tragedy, we actually had a feel-good story for our main event winner. His name was Steve Galley, a very nice older gentleman with a Colts fan. Had a little Indianapolis Colts hat on the entire time. And he won the main event. Super nice guy. He's from southern Indiana. And I was chatting with him a little bit after he won. And he said he had just been down to New Orleans, you know, where the circuit event was going on, and was just getting crushed. He had planned to go down there, play the entire time, and then drive to Downstream on the way home and play an R event. But just could not, for the life of him, win anything. He was losing in tournaments, losing in cash games. So bad, so much so that he just left New Orleans early and went home to southern Indiana. And then still decided to get back in the car and drive all the way back to Oklahoma. I know he's happy that he did, obviously, because he won the main event. His winner's chair got him unstuck. He said just barely, but got him unstuck for the past 2 weeks of play. And, you know, that's a good feeling, I think, for a poker player when you're just running bad, and then you get one really great day and get you unstuck.
Cool. That's real cool.
I gotta say, this was probably the fastest play I've ever seen in a main event. It was a $1,000 buy-in, I think, for this one. And players dropped really quickly. They got to the final table, and you know, I was watching it out of one eye and doing some work on my laptop. And almost every time I got up, I sent an email, I got up, somebody else was walking away. Like, wow. People are going quickly, right? So they got down to six-handed, and that's when the chop discussion started. Never really got an agreement on chopping, which I always like, because I prefer them not to chop. I think it's more fun to play it out. But again, it's not my money. So then the last hand, I mean, they got the heads up really quickly, walked over. And I believe they only played, this might have been the only hand heads up. It could have been no more than two or three, though. And I get over there, and the guy shoves all in, the runner-up, and our champion thought for a while, and was like, all right, I'm going to call. Champion turns over ace-six. The guy that shoved on him turns over jack-10, and the board was 7-5, 7-4.
And?
And?
One more card?
Well, yeah, but I mean, I'm just thinking, oh my gosh, I mean, our champion was open-ended. With an ace, so I could see where he thought. Obviously, the other guy was making a move with jack-10, really nowhere to go. And blinds at that point were 1,000, 2,000.
Wow.
And I don't know exactly how deep stack they were, but pretty deep stack. I'm going to say 100x maybe, at most. Somewhere between 50 and 100x. It was certainly far more deep stack than needed to be for this kind of play, I thought, in my opinion. But the board ran out, the jack or 10 didn't get there, and our champion obviously won it, and it was over. Just like that. I'm like, wow.
Wow.
You know, because here's the thing, I'm not a big fan of watching poker. You know, TV where they cut it up and stuff, obviously it makes it more tolerable, but I've been to some events that have stretched for hours, and people are just trading chips back and forth. But this one actually ended a lot quicker than I would hope. I was kind of hoping to see some more play, but, you know, I guess people just want to get out of there.
Well, hey, you know, it's funny, too, because when you first wrote it, I was thinking, what's the last card? But that's when it happened at 7-5, 7-4.
Yeah.
I thought it was like, because the last hand, he held A6, he then shoved, and I'm thinking, okay. So they shoved with 7-5, 7-4. That's crazy. And that's a great call by Gailey. That's unbelievable.
Yeah, absolutely. And then I guess the last thing about the actual event, unfortunately, I think it's just further proof that it's just so hard to offer events other than No Limit Hold'em these days. It's so incredibly sad for those of us that like to play these events. You know, there's just not that level of interest in them. And, you know, every time you only attract 30, 40 people for these events, it makes it harder and harder for tournament directors in the future to put even one non-No Limit Hold'em event on their schedule, let alone tons of them like Downstream did. You know, folks remember when we had Dale Hunter, the poker manager, on here. There were only a handful of No Limit events on this. There was just an incredible variety. Stud and Triple Draw and Horse and things like that. And you know, at the end of the day, you know, these programs have got to pay the bills. And if they're not getting people willing to play these games, they're not going to offer them. And I don't really know what we can do to stop it. You know, people just want to play No Limit Hold'em. You know, certainly think we're doing our best on the show to introduce people to those kind of games, but maybe not. But you know, eventually this stuff's just going to disappear. So don't have online. At least when we had online, you could get those kind of games going a little bit more. But live, it's very difficult these days.
Yeah, that's sad.
But despite that, obviously, like I said, we had a great time, a great group of guys at Downstream that ran the event, and the venue is really top-notch. I think some people missed out by not coming. This is the first time I visited since the second hotel hotel tower had been built, so they have a lot more capacity now. Rooms are ridiculously nice. I had the whole customs thing and a flight from hell, and then it was an hour and a half drive from the airport to the hotel, and then you check in and you walk in that room, and you're like, thank you.
Finally.
Around. Oh my gosh. You know, big, huge bathrooms, nice, comfortable beds, huge, ridiculous size TV. It's definitely a good value there. So, you know, folks are looking for a place to stay, definitely go back to downstream. Food, it was absolutely fantastic. I didn't eat too much the last time I was there, but this time I went to the buffet twice, you know, because that's really, as odd as it sounds, a good place to go when you're dieting. You know, because you can make a nice big salad, you can get a ton of fruit, and then you can kind of pick and choose what looks healthy, you know, some grilled chicken and things like that. And I was sitting there on the second day, just minding my business like I always do, and I always think the most fun place for me to listen to other people's conversations, which, you know, I'm not an FBI guy, but, you know, sometimes people just talk loud, so you hear stuff, right? The best place to do that is at casino buffets, because you hear the most hilarious things ever at a casino buffet. So I'm sitting there eating my salad with my, you know, pineapple, and there's a family right next to me, three very large folks, and not necessarily fat, but, you know, they just grow them big in Oklahoma, right?
Yeah.
And one of them said, and this is the diet tip of the year, I think. He's like, oh, I don't want to overeat the buffet. I got to be able to walk to the slot machine. And I love it. You know, I got to be able to lose my money today. And if I'm too fat, I'm not going to make it to the slot machine to do it. Love it. And they also have an absolutely fantastic steakhouse there called Red Oak. Went there one night, and the food director for the steakhouse joined us at dinner, and we had a great conversation with him on just how important it is to serve the best food to the clients there, and how much they try to, you know, look at the menu pretty regularly. They just brought in a couple new chefs, and they're getting ready to add some new dishes, including buffalo. Tenderloin pretty soon there too, but they take you know, a good whole month of testing and doing recipes before they introduce stuff, so they really try to take care of you food wise there. And speaking of buffalo, last time I was there, the poker manager at the time was telling me, you know, hey, we're on the our property is actually at the corner of three states, and they actually have a marker on the ground where that is. And I didn't have a chance to get there last time, so I went down to the hotel front desk, and I'm like, hey, does this thing exist? They're like, oh, yeah, just go down the road a little bit, turn down this dirt road, and you'll get there. I'm like, great, I'm going to do my morning walk. It's perfect, right? So I'm on the way there, and three buffalo staring right back at me.
Cool.
You don't see buffalo when you're walking in Florida, I don't think.
So was there like a fence in between you and these buffalo?
Yeah, right, yeah. They've got a little buffalo pen there, but it's a, you know, a pretty big area. And I think they say they have about nine now. I saw three of them. But they're right by the gate, almost like, dude, let me out. And I'm like, dude, I'm a dude. I'm not going to let you out. I don't know what you guys are going to do to me.
But. Dude, I'm a dude.
So I found a little three states market, and it was kind of cool to actually, even in my slimmer state now, to be able to fit into three states at the same time.
That's pretty cool.
Okay, so after the event ended, I wanted to make the most of the trip, so I got in the car and visited a couple other casinos, so I'll do a little mini road trip here for you. First stop was Indigo Sky. This is a brand new casino. It used to be Bordertown Casino, which I probably talked about last time I went to downstream, which Bordertown Casino was a very loose word. It was really more kind of a gambling hall. Mm-hmm. Indigo Sky, completely opposite. Beautiful tribal property, huge hotel, very nice on the inside, and overlooking a very nice piece of land too, a little bit better than where Bordertown was. Interestingly enough, they put the poker room, it's closed off because, you know, it's smoking in the casino, but the poker room they put behind doors, and it's closed off, so it's non-smoking. And they put it in the room with their off-track betting. So at one end of the poker room, huge big screens with the horse racing and all that, and the little terminals where you can bet on the horses and dogs or whatever. And the other half's the poker room. Mm-hmm. And they have eight tables there, very nice. They got Heartland Poker Tour coming there in October. And I was talking to some folks, and they're like, yeah, it took a little getting used to having the OTB in here. But now I've learned a ton about horses. but it's a very nice area, and, you know, good place to play poker. Definitely a little bit better than the room before. I played in the Bordertown room the last time I was up there. But definitely want to check that out. And then I got the car over to Tulsa, and there's three poker rooms in Tulsa. First one, right off the freeway, is Hard Rock. Just as you expect, extremely stylish. It's also closed off in a circular room right in the middle of the casino, so really nice how they have that designed there. Got in the car and went down to River Spirit, which is down the southern side of Tulsa. And on the way down, I checked on the little Bravo app to see what games were going on, because, you know, even a downstream, I was talking to the manager there. He's like, you know what, I can barely even get a 3-6 game going on the weekends. You know, No Limit is just destroyed action in the state, the 1-2 No Limit game. And that's all they had at Hard Rock Tulsa. But I got on the Bravo app, right? And River Spirit, three tables of 1-2 No Limit, 10-20 Omaha 8.
No way.
And I'm like, pounding on the gas to get there. I'm like, I will play that game if I get there. So I get there, and I'm like a kid on Christmas. I'm running in there, and I burst there. I'm like, 10-20 Omaha 8. And he's like, okay, Scott, I'll put you up there. Scott, I got to tell you, no one's left that game all day.
Wow.
And I look up at the board, and I'm sixth on the list. And I'm like, oh, no. And he's like, you know what? I'm going to try to get another game going here. Stay, hang tight. So I sit down at the room, obviously do my look around so I can let you guys know. And then I get another comfortable room, not particularly stylish as some of the other ones, but certainly comfortable. It's semi-closed off the casino, so it's not completely walled off, but definitely smoke-free and everything there. Of course, they have a thirst station, which makes it one of the top 10 poker rooms in the country. So I was there for about 20 minutes or so, and the guy came over, and he's like, you know, Scott, I'm sorry, I tried to get a shorthanded must-move game going, and the other folks just don't want to do it, so... you're more than welcome to hang out here, but it's probably going to be years before you get into this game.
I never understand that. Why wouldn't people want to just play? I mean, you want to play the game? So what? It's six-handed, right? It's still 24 cards are still being dealt. I mean, it's still a full table. You're still going to get somebody to play with you. I mean, I don't get it.
I don't understand this. And we deal with this on a cruise, too, and other poker rooms I go to. I mean, people just don't like to play shorthanded. Now, I can understand if it's like four or something. And it depends on the game as well, too. But you're right. I mean, with an Omaha 8 game, you're going to get enough action, even four-handed.
Yeah.
We're talking six-handed here to make it worth your while. And it's a must move. So, you know, you're on the list. So at least now you're playing rather than just sitting around watching the highlights on the basketball game the night before.
Exactly.
And eventually, you're going to get moved to the main game where you're going to have a full 10 people there and be able to play. So you're right. I just really can't explain it. But, you know, people don't want to play it, I don't want to play it. I don't want to force people to play it. But, you know, it makes it very tough for folks to get these games going if they know. Because eventually those people on the list are going to leave.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I did. I'm like, hey, I want to go to a baseball game tonight. I'm not going to sit here for 6 hours hoping I get in this game, you know. So eventually what happens is that the game ends up breaking. So if you're not willing to kind of help the poker room out, it's going to be very hard to keep those games going, or very hard to get them to spread them in the future. I mean, 10-20 Omaha 8 in Oklahoma? That's amazing. I was very excited.
I'd play heads up. I offer on the ship all the time. I'm like, oh, I'll play heads up if you want to start the table. I don't care, you know, but they just,
oh, yeah, yeah.
They don't want to. They don't want
to. Yeah, because once people are there, then people walk in and they're going to sit down. And, you know, a lot of these most moves shorthanded end up filling up pretty quickly. I mean, how many times on a cruise ship we start a table 4 or 5-handed, and within 10 minutes it's full.
Yep, and then we
people
get up.
Come in, hey, the game's going. All right, I'll sit down.
Yep.
You come in, the game's not going, just a bunch of people sitting around a table waiting. You know what? I'm going to go to the show.
That's right.
Oh, man.
So but, you went to the baseball game instead?
Yeah, well, I was going to go there anyhow. It was going to be, you know, later at night, but... so then I went up to Osage Million Dollar up on the north side of town. Unfortunately, that room was completely closed that day. And in all fairness, all these rooms were kind of struggling for games. It was Sunday of Memorial Day weekend.
Yeah.
And so people obviously had much better things to do than play poker. But the Million Dollar is a smaller room. It's down a hallway, a little bit semi-closed off. Probably not as nice as the other ones, but definitely a comfortable place to play. And then I got done with that, and I had 2 hours before the baseball game. I don't know what to do. Found a bar, 80s bar, with arcade games. $2 beers, and you get 5 tokens. Had a blast. But then so we got the Tulsa Drillers game, the AA, and both Osage Million Dollar and River Spirit are huge sponsors of the team, right? So, you know, they do these things where, you know, you got the, you know, in Milwaukee, you got the little sausage races and all that, right?
Yeah.
Up on the scoreboard at the end of, like, the third inning, they had the River Spirit Poker Chip Run. And so not as much fun as on the field, you know, when you have people dressed up like poker chips and running, but they do a little thing where you can pick the green chip, the red chip or the black chip or whatever, and they do an animated thing. I just thought it was different. I haven't been to a game where casino's been a sponsor and then they were part of that, but kind of need to see trying to get people interested in poker in some way.
So was it a poker chip or was it just any old chip that you get when you're playing slots or whatever?
Chip. I mean, it looks the same.
Like roulette or whatever.
What's the difference between a poker chip and a casino chip?
That's what I mean. Was it a poker chip or was it a casino chip?
That's what I'm asking. What's the difference?
I mean, well, I think anybody interested in poker because it's some round disc is running across the baseball field.
They could have just said a chip run.
So they did say that. They said poker chip run.
Play poker.
All right, cool. So I wanted to clarify for their listeners. I wanted to make sure that it was actually a poker chip run.
Oh, man. Well, I'm going to try to end it with a little fun here. I went to Branson, Missouri. Have you heard of Branson, Missouri?
I have only heard of the guy who owns Virgin Airlines, Branson. That's the only Branson I know.
Yeah, I don't think he's really related to this. Okay. But I heard of Branson. It's a big tourist area. It's kind of like kind of a homespun kind of fun place. They do a lot of live entertainment, a lot of country music, hee-haw kind of humor kind of thing. And I'm like, I got an extra day, I'm going to go over and check it out, right? And the best way I can describe Branson to you is Myrtle Beach for people who are scared to swim.
Okay.
It's got all the little kitschy 3 t-shirts for $10 stands, all go-karts and the mini-golf things and the overpriced terrible restaurants and things like that. But I made the most of it. I walked around and saw the world's biggest ball of twine and the world's largest chicken and all this kind of stuff, right? And then I'm walking and all of a sudden I see this truck on the side of the road that says the Branson Ball Knocker. And had one of those big inflatable see-through balls. I don't know if you've ever seen it. I don't know if you watch Amazing Race. I know you're a survivor. But yeah. I've seen an Amazing Race where you get inside this big inflatable ball at the top of the hill, and they just push it, and you roll down to the bottom of the hill.
I have seen those. I just didn't know that's what it was called.
Well, I don't know what it's always called. But in Branson, it's called the Ball Knocker.
Okay.
And I'm like, oh, my gosh, I've got to do this, right? So I walk up, and I'm like, how much? And they're like, $25. And I'm like, sold! So I get in that thing, and you strap yourself in. You got to climb in through this little tiny hole. Mm-hmm. And then you get in, you strap yourself in with like 18 seatbelts. And at this point, I'm starting to wonder, did I make a good purchase today? And they're like, I have like 100 seatbelts on me. And they're like, yeah, you got another one. I missed one? Where did I miss one? What part of me's not strapped in right now? And I finally strapped it in, and they're like, all right, you got to hold on up here. And then, so I pulled my phone out, right? Because I'm going to take a picture of me like halfway down this mountain, right? And they're like, oh, you gotta take a photo? I'm like, yeah. He's like, all right, well, at least hold on with one hand. I'm like, oh my gosh, what's gonna happen to me? So I try to take the picture really quickly, and they push me down, and oh my gosh. At the bottom, I call Laura, and I'm like, you and Chris almost hit the lottery. Never rolling down a hill at a inflatable ball ever again in my life.
We're gonna have to start taking out like separate policies for... you ever see one of those people, they want to do skydiving, but they own a corporation, and they got to have this big board meeting with the insurance company to determine if he can do these things. We're going to have to start having, like, road trip conference calls with our insurance company and say, is it okay for Scott to do these things? That's crazy. So it was a clear ball. How far was his hill?
It was 550 feet.
Oh, man.
I misrepresented it as 550 yards on Facebook, which is the point I corrected and said if it was 550 yards, there definitely would have been a cleanup in aisle 6.
Yeah, that's a long way. But
you
still,
don't think about
still
this thing.
A lot.
I mean, I'm like, oh, it'd be just cool just to roll down the hill. I remember when I was a kid, you lay down lengthways and you roll down a hill. That's the best thing ever, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
You get in the ball when you're 41 years old. And you start down, all of a sudden you're like, it's really slowly going. I mean, it doesn't fly down this hill. It's a big lumbering piece of plastic. And so you went, whoosh.
There were no, bumps. Were there bumps?
No,
there
weren't any bumps. But, all right. So you're like, eventually I'm like, oh my gosh. And every time your stomach is falling out, and then it hits the bottom, and then falls back out and hits the bottom. And then you get to the bottom, and there's a little Mexican guy down there for your safety, and you're bouncing all around down there, and you're disoriented, and it finally comes to a stop, and you're like, did I live? And he's like, yeah, yeah, you live. Get out.
Get out.
And I get out, and I'm like, oh, my gosh. Have you ever done that? And he's like, oh no.
Oh, man.
But, yeah, so if you're in the Oklahoma area, it's actually about 3 hours from the nearest casino, so it's probably not that close of a drive. But check in Branson and then do the Branson ball knock.
The Branson ball knock.
This is Joe Navarro, and you're listening to the best poker cast in all the universe, Ante Up, the absolute best on poker.
All right, our longtime friend Dr. Frankie is back on the show, Chris.
Hey, he's doing the end of the week, huh?
Yeah. He sent this in quite a while ago, and we're catching up now that we don't have any swag-worthy hands. But
do I need to write this down, or is it like a situation?
Well, you know, it is a, it's, you know, he's a doctor, so everything is 100 simples more, medical ease. So
okay.
You might get a little complicated with it, you know. All right, so he says there are two villains in this hand that he had some history with both of them. Villain number one was my immediate left, and we had sparred at least 3 times since I sat down. Each time we made it to showdown, once with him acting as the aggressor and twice with me leading the action. Twice he mucked without showing that table in my hand. On the last hand, he shoved $60 with Jack 10 suited, and I caught him with a pair of eights. He failed to improve. He seemed a little frustrated and went for a smoke. Turned to the table and rebought for $100.
Hmm.
Sounds like me minus the smoke. Villain 2 had bought in for $200 and had only played a few rounds. He won a few small pots and chipped up to about $230. He had tested me in an earlier hand by betting aggressively in every street, and eventually shoving his ace-7 against my ace-queen. My kicker was ahead the whole way, and the river gave us both the same boat, and we chopped. Ah, oh, that's the worst.
Yeah, that's brutal.
Actually, it's not the worst. The worst is losing. But besides losing, that's the worst. He says, I've been toying with the idea that the 1-2 no-limit hold'em level, most players aren't sophisticated enough, myself included, to categorize other plays as tight or loose, passive or aggressive, but simply as successful or vulnerable. Actually, I want to stop and talk about that. I think that's a good point.
Well, so he's saying that he doesn't think that these players are capable of understanding beyond their
generally
own cards.
Generally speaking, obviously, there's always one or two guys at the table that know what's going on. But you know, we spend a lot of time, and by we, I mean the poker community, talking about whether you're tight or loose and what's your table lineage. And I think he's right. I think at the end of the day, at that level, people remember who's won pots and who's lost pots more than anything else.
I don't know. If it's the only game, if it's ubiquitous, and it's the only game, I would think that more people are knowing what's going on than not. I mean, if that's all you see is 1-2 no limit everywhere you go and everybody's playing it, I can't imagine they're all sitting there still sort of naive or ignorant to how people play at this point. I mean, you come across it every
strong.
Once in a while.
I think it's just not being as intuitive or... intuitive is the wrong word. Not paying attention quite as closely as you would in a 2-5 game.
Yeah. No, that's true. I mean, if you're going to find it anywhere, it's going to be the 1-2 game. I just don't want it to come across as everybody who plays 1-2 doesn't have any idea what's going on around them except for their own cards.
No, so I just think the pool of players is diluted because there's so many games.
Yeah.
You know, you go into any casino, there's 5 or 6 or 10 1-2 lemon games going, maybe 1 or 2 2-5, and if you're lucky, something else they can play. And because of that, I mean, obviously, you could end up at a really top table with 10 really great 1-2 players. But generally speaking,
yeah,
it's a bell curve. You know, you're going to have one or two really good players. You're going to have one or two people that have absolutely no idea what you're doing. And then everybody else is kind of in the middle a little bit.
Yeah, and that's because it's the lowest they offer, usually, too.
Exactly.
So you have to have the people who don't know what they're doing or aren't that savvy. So,
all right. So we continue to say... he says, if you've won a few pots and have a larger stack, other players bluff you less and usually have the goods when they call. Your C bets will work more often. On the contrary, if you've been losing, you can expect to get called and bluffed at more often.
Okay.
He said, when this hand started, my table image was moderately successful, mainly because of villain number one.
Yeah, I was just thinking that.
He says, I was under the gun with $235. Villain number one had $100, and villain two had $230. And we were dealt the 8 of hearts, 9 of hearts.
Okay, so we're under the gun with 8, 9 of hearts. I don't know. It depends. It depends on the table when if I see him like that. You know, if I'm going to play it, I'm going to raise and represent. So, if I'm going to play it, I'm not going to limp with it. You know, I'm going to fold it or I'm going to raise it. So,
Very interesting.
Yeah. I mean, if you're limping with it, first of all, you're out of position. You know, I don't play suited connectors really unless I'm in position. Because there are a lot of moves you can make in position with those cards, and then you're going to want to know that there's enough money in the pot to make it worth the money that you're playing. I mean, that, a lot of that goes toward limit hold'em, but still, I think it's still a good axiom to hold on to for no limit. I really don't want... I think Lee Childs would agree with me, too. You don't want to play suited connectors out of position, and you certainly don't want to do it no limit hold'em, but if you're going to play them, you might as well be, you know, you might as well be raising with them so that you're... sort of misdirection. You know, I don't want them to put me on the hand. Every time I limp, it's a suited connector or a suited ace, then, you know, they're going to know what I have, so
this way I come under the gun. Paying attention to that stuff, too.
Well, yeah, whatever, but even so, people don't need to pay attention to the fact that when you raise, they know that you're raising, that was crap. Yeah, I mean, that's generally the rule. You're not raising with low cards, so when you're raising, people will take notice of that and think you have a good hand. That doesn't require any kind of savviness at all. So
I'm going to agree with 50% of your strategy. The 50% I'm going to agree with is I would fold this hand.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. I would probably fold, but if
which
I'm going to
probably
play...
Which means 100% agree then.
Yeah.
Now, if you're going to play... here's my problem with raising. I think it's fundamentally sound to raise with it. You're right. But we're in a 1-2 cash game. I don't know why we need to take those kind of chances. I think we talked about this on the show quite a bit. And we just started this whole hand a week talking about how these players are not the most talented players, I think we can agree on. You know, the better players are at 2-5 probably. So I don't feel the urgency to get too creative with my play in a 1-2 game. So at this point, you know, I'm just going to fold.
Well, that,
right.
That's
if I'm in
what I'm
position,
saying.
Then maybe
I'm
I'll play
fold
that.
It,
but
probably most of the time.
I just don't really see any reason to get involved in this pot. And to raise and represent a tournament completely different. I absolutely would probably raise under the gun with this because you know you got to do some different things. But a cash game, just fold, wait for a better spot.
Yeah.
Now, if I'm going to play though, I would argue because I don't want to turn this into a big bluffing hand where I got to raise now and then represent the flop and then probably continue and then and find myself committed 50, 60 bucks on this craptastic hand. So I would argue if the table has been limpy, then I might put my $2 in and hope it limps around, and then I get a nice slop where I could stack something with it. But that's only if the table has been incredibly limpy. And that's even if it has been limpy, it's very tough to count on seeing the slop for $2. So that all steers me back to folding.
How do you spell limpy?
Limpy?
Is it L-I-M-P-Y, like wimpy?
I would think so. Yeah. Well, I guess it depends if you're in a whimsical mood, it'd be L-I-P-I-E.
Because then it's like blimpy.
Yeah, exactly.
If you like having a sandwich, spell it with an I-E. Well, like I said, I think that I would fold this hand. If I limped with it, yeah, I would hope that it's a passive table. If it's an aggressive table, then I'm looking at losing my money for no reason.
Yeah, no.
So... And if I'm going to play
it... If I feel it's a really good shot, then I'm going to be able to see this flop for $2. And then, you know, in a reverse thing, in that if you do feel confident with that, then you're probably going to get a couple other limpers along, so the pot's going to be not huge, but it's going to be decent enough to give you some odds on limping. And then you can always, because you're under the gun, remember, people are sophisticated enough to understand that at some point, that and there are... Unfortunately, a number of people that are going to limp aces and kings in that spot, too. So you could still represent a bigger hand later on if you did it.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm folding, but if I'm playing it, I'm raising it. I don't agree with a call. So let's just, unless, like you said, it's an incredibly passive table and I can see a free flop, or, well, not free, but cheap flop. Yeah, so, but we don't have that indication here. So going on what I've been told, I'm either raising to play it or I'm folding it.
Our hero says, sometimes I'll fold this hand in early position, but because of my quote-unquote successful image, I decided to raise the table standard of $8.
I don't disagree with that. I mean, if, like he said, he's been known to show down winning hands, and he can really catch somebody by surprise if he gets a really nice flop for this 8-9 of hearts. So.
But isn't it risky? I mean, I know you've already said this, so I'm not trying to get you to tell me what you've already told me, but, I mean, what are we trying to accomplish here?
We're trying to win money.
We're raising $8 to win $3. you know, if no one, if everybody really does think we're successful and raising under the gun now, oh my gosh, I have to have a really good hand to beat this guy, so I'm going to fold, and you're going to win $3. I've never understood that in a no limit cash game, the raising to win $3. So then, I guess the next thing you're hoping for is maybe one caller, and then be able to represent whatever hits the flop. And now you're picking up $8 plus the blinds. I just think you're setting yourself up to risk a lot of money for a little payout.
Yeah, I think this is why you don't do well in no limit cash games, to be honest. I mean,
yeah,
let me ask you this. You have ace king now instead of 8-9. You're under the gun. What do you do?
Well, yeah, I raise $8.
Oh, really? How come?
But I have a better shot of hitting the flop.
No, you don't. But you still have two cards that have the same exact chance of hitting the flop.
You're right, I don't have a better chance of hitting the flop, but I have a better chance of winning the hand.
Why?
Without approving. Because my cards are better.
Okay, so you missed the flop completely.
If I almost missed the flop, I guarantee you my ace king is probably going to win more.
Right, but that's not the point. So you missed the flop. What do? You check?
Well, I'm still going to c-bet.
Yeah, why?
Because I have more confidence because my hand has more confidence.
Right, but that's the whole point, is that he's doing the same thing, but he's doing it with 8-9. They think he has ace-king, so it doesn't matter.
Well, I understand that he's trying to represent that, and trust me, I represent that kind of crap all the time. It's just, in a tournament, you have to. You have to, because you've got a finite amount of time. In a cash game, you don't have to.
Right, so then no one's going to play with you either, then. You know what I mean? They're going to see if you turn over aces when you raise.
You can still be creative in position, and I'm incredibly creative in position in a no limit cash game.
Okay.
Out of position, I don't see any reason why I need to be. If I'm on the button, cutoff, hijack, those kind of things, I'll play a wide variety of crap and play it like I'm playing ace king.
I think
that's where you can be varied in what you're doing, because you're in position, so you have extra insurance policy there. Right now, you're in the absolute worst preflop position. You're going to put $8 in. You don't have to see bet, but you're probably going to have to, and you're probably going to miss this flop. And then if somebody sticks around, somebody calls you on that flop, then what do you do? What do you do after that? You have no hope of improving on the turn other than pairing.
Okay, well, that just still the same thing happens with ace-king. You do the exact same thing. You missed ace-king.
Oh, no, but ace-king, I still have a shot that maybe the hand can improve and I can win.
Well, let's say if same could happen with 8 or a 9
in that turn. 10-jack-7. Oh, no, that's bad.
That's a great flop.
Yeah, it's a very bad example. Queen-10-3. That's still not good.
How about we just move on?
Yeah. What I'm trying to get at is if there's an overcard to my 8s and 9s, and someone shows interest in the pot, they probably have hit that card. So now I'm going to have to go runner-runner to win this hand, regardless of, unless there's that straight possibility, which I just pulled out of my head for 4 straight times, trying to find an example where it wasn't. Where ace-king, I don't have to go runner-runner. I can hit one of my other cards later on. Now, again, all poker is just playing the person at the card, so I get that as well, too. But again, it's cash. You don't have to be that sophisticated at 1-2. In fact, you shouldn't be that sophisticated at 1-2, in my opinion. If you're that sophisticated of a player, play 2-5, where you can make a lot more money.
Well, I don't think of this as a sophisticated play, though. Raising with 8-9 suited under the gun is not sophisticated. It's just mixing
that
up play.
That part isn't, but being able to get this hand to completion successfully is where the sophistication comes in.
Well, I think I've even heard you
say
it. If
the flop comes 9-9-8, it doesn't matter. I mean, you're going to win that hand, probably. But
right, but there are a lot of times, I think I've even heard you say it, where people just, they raise, hope to get one caller, then c-bet and take the pot down and do that once an hour and make $20 an hour, and that's how you do it. You know what I mean? There are different ways to make your money. It doesn't always have to be with a hand. And if that's all you're playing is a hand's in position or not, no one's going to play with
you. I agree, but I mean, why not do that with better position, better hands, which you're going to get on average. I mean, you're going to get the same number of hands in position as out of position. That we know for sure.
Mm.
And then the chances of getting, you know, good hands versus bad hands, you know, are going to work out. I just think there's better spots to.
Oh yeah, and don't think I don't agree with that, because there are better spots. Obviously, I just think that Frankie here's got some money. He's got an image. This is actually a juicy hand if it hits right, especially if you get
absolutely
somebody calling with like queens. You know
hand.
What I mean?
I love this hand. I just don't like it in this position in this game.
You know, but
different game, different position. Then I would be all over this.
I agree with his raise, though, so let's see what happens. I agree with that, but let's see what happens.
We haven't even got to the next person.
I know.
all right. both villains call, and I was out of position going into the flop. He says, my plan was to c-bet in the flop, but fold resistance unless I hit two pair or better.
Okay.
Flop was seven of diamonds, ten of clubs, jack of clubs.
Nice.
I had flopped the nuts and was first to act. Pot's $24 after the rake. What do we do?
I definitely am betting, because...
See, now this just ruined my whole pre-flop speech. This is just beautiful. I mean, obviously, flopping the nuts, you always like that. But you're right. I mean, no one's going to put you on 8-9 here. So now you not only do you flop the nuts, but you've got a very disguised nuts.
Right. You're hoping that someone has, like, an overpair or set or just ace-jack. But I'm going to bet because I don't want Broadway to get there for someone else who called a raise, knowing that they may likely have something like king-queen.
You got clubs. You got other things going on. And I mean, this is a tragedy if you don't bet this, in my opinion.
Yeah, you cannot check this.
Absolute tragedy.
Yeah. Yeah, you've set this all up to for this
you're
moment.
You're not giving the people an opportunity to raise you thinking that you're c-betting, which is what you normally would do with this craptastic hand that you thought you should raise with pre-flop. You just got lucky and flopped the straight.
Yeah.
Have to bet here.
And the funny thing, too, is I might even overbet.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think you're right. I might put I might even put 20 in here.
I might even bet more than that. I might even bet like 30 or 40 just to really make it look like I'm afraid.
Yeah.
You know, and I've raised with aces or kings or something, and I'm trying to protect my hand and get somebody with... Because if they don't have anything, they're not going to come along anyway.
That's true. Absolutely.
So why not overbet and get them to try to, you know, shove with a set of sevens or something or ace-jack? So I'm going to overbet
like
this. Yeah, I'm going to overbet. I'm going to bet like 35.
Okay. our hero says, I wanted to charge the flush draws but not lose them. I thought a bet of $20 or more might drive away the draws, so I bet 16.
Oh, that's not enough.
Yeah.
Not in
the
cash.
I mean, here's kind of the problem, I think, is now we're looking at the board rather than thinking about what our opponents think we have. And the advantage, as we just talked about, of playing this hand that we did in this position is that no one's going to put you on it.
Mm-hmm.
So... At this point, I think what you need to do is what we just said, is represent a big pair that people think is vulnerable on this board and have them try to take advantage of you. I'm not trying to lure people in here. I'm trying to make them think I'm scared and just throw money at me.
Yep. Yeah, I want them to just like come over the top of me and think that I'm weak or nervous, and then I get it all in with them. And you know, I mean, you can still suck out on you. Obviously, that can still happen. But
yeah, it's going to happen regardless. Yeah,
you need to bet more than 16 there, though, I think.
Yeah, you're just not getting much value out of it.
No, it's 2/3 the pot. That's a standard bet. We're trying to mislead these people. We're trying to put an image in their head that we are representing the hand that we had, that we didn't have. I mean, that we thought we were representing before the flop and blah, blah, blah. So I think you need to bet more than the pot, or pot at least.
All right. Villain number one quickly shoved all in for $92. Villain number two thought for only a few seconds and called the $92. And it's 76 to us.
Why reshove if I can?
Yeah,
if I'm allowed.
Yeah.
If
Villain 2 started with about $5 less than us. So
yeah, I would reshove. And we got the nuts.
Yeah, at this point, right? Yeah,
it's not like it's Omaha where you got to worry about redraws. You're going to be up against a draw and you know whatever. But I have to.
Villain number two only thought for a few seconds. You know, he's obviously got something. I mean, I guess there's a case to be made that he's only got to think for a few seconds because villain number one is all in, so maybe there's a chance we're going to check it down, but more likely he's going to put whatever in that we're going to put in. He's not going anywhere at this point, right?
No.
Get it in good and not be a put to a test later when a flush draw gets it or something like that.
No,
right?
Definitely want to get it in while you got the nuts, if you can. There's no way that guy's going to fold now either, doesn't seem like.
Alright, our hero says, it felt to me like two big flush draws, or maybe one draw and a set of sevens. Pocket tens or jacks probably would have 3-bet preflop. Even though I had the nuts, I felt like my hand value was shrinking and that I'd be satisfied with the present pot if only my straight would just hold up through two more cards, so I called. Pot was now $300. You think I play scared at the table.
Wow. You have the nuts and you call. I would love to just take that down right now, so if you shove, maybe V2 will fold. And now you're going heads up against the guy who...
Yeah, I mean, if that's what you're worried about. I mean, really, I want him to call, too. But if you're worried about getting drawn out on, the best thing you could do is get him out of the pot.
Yeah.
The other guy's not getting out of pot now. He's committed. He's already in. So
yeah, would you rather go against two cards or four cards?
Yeah, you're scared to get that guy out. You know, go all in. I don't think you need to be scared here, but even though I'm not scared, I'm still going to go all in. So.
No, because then what happens when a club comes on a turn and the guy shoves? Now you're stuck. You know, does he representing it and he's just trying to go heads up against the first guy to get that side pot? Or, you know, what is he doing? You know, you got to get it all in now.
All right, so the pot's now about $300. Remember, one player is all in. The turn is the 10 of spades. So our board is 7 of diamonds, 10 of clubs, jack of clubs, 10 of spades, absolute brutal card.
And here's why, another reason why. Not just because of the fact that it gives somebody a possible boat, but let's say villain 1 gets the boat, mm-hmm. and villain 2 was only on a draw for a clubs. Right. Now you're still getting his money at least to break even. Now, of course, it could go the other way around. The guy who has you covered makes the boat, but it could have easily been that this guy was calling with a flush draw, and that's why he only called rather than re-raise with a set or whatever. And so now you're looking at this guy, if he now shoves on you, or if you get nervous and check on him, and he shoves on you then, now you're looking at folding, then he's the one who has the club draw, and the other guy has the boat, and you know what I mean? So you're trying to get as much money out of both these guys as possible, and now you have to worry that you don't have the best hand, because now you've got like the eighth best hand. So that sucks. That's a terrible, terrible card for us, and we should have shoved.
Yeah, because now we're in this agonizing decision. It may not be that agonizing, but we have a decision now. Whereas, had we shoved, we had no decision.
Right.
And we had the nuts at the time, so you can certainly defend it. You know, now you're going to get people like me that are looking for whether we need to save money or not, having some crazy thoughts, or we shouldn't.
Yep.
So our hero says, now I no longer have the nuts and want to exercise some pot control. Villain number 2 seemed to be willing to check it down, so I checked, and so did he.
Huh.
I mean, at this point, if he's going to let me check it down...
That's weird. He seemed to be willing to check it down. What does that even mean? What does he emit that makes you think he seemed to be willing to check it down?
Sometimes I could get that. You know, maybe there's an ugh in the voice or a look of disinterest or scare. You can get that sometimes. You really should read this column by this guy named Joe Navarro. I don't know if you've heard of him. But
but that weakness means strength.
Really good stuff.
So if he's given this sort of, I'm not interested, that means he really is interested.
If he's the type that's trying to do the misdirection. But he gives a 1-2
play. It's a 1-2 game. I know. They all suck. I know.
I didn't say suck. They're just not as sophisticated.
All right. So we both check. All right. That's interesting.
All right. So the river was the tray of hearts. So our final board, 7 of diamonds, 10 of clubs, jack of clubs, 10 of spades, tray of hearts. Really shouldn't have changed too much for us. And once again, it's on us.
Okay, so here's the deal. Here's what I'm afraid is going to happen. Now, I have no prior knowledge of this, okay? And I'm not afraid of him shoving on us. What I'm afraid of is that we both check it down. The guy did have a flush draw. We get nothing, and villain 1 has a boat, and we lose all the money. When if we shoved, we might have gotten villain 2 to come along with his draw and made his money. And so we both check it down again, and we get nothing out of it. We end up losing money because villain 1 has the best hand. That's what's going to bother me if I... check. So I think I'm going to value bet here. Why would he check a boat behind? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So now I'm going to value bet and put like $60 out there, really. I know you're saying, if he's willing to check behind, I'm not going to check it down now because I want to make some money on this hand in case villain 1 has a better hand than me.
Yeah. So I think we painted ourselves in this corner here where we have to bet here in hopes of getting something. You're right. It might end up that villain 1 has a weaker hand and we're getting beaten. We're making a bad decision here, but... You know, if we check it down, you're right. It's very likely we're walking out of this hand with nothing. We flopped the nuts.
Yeah.
In a once in a session flop where you're raising under the gun with 8-9, you know, you got to get some value out of this.
Yeah, I think so.
All right, so our hero says same logic. I checked the river, and so did villain number 2.
Ugh.
Oh, I have a feeling I know where we're going.
Yeah.
It's been a while since I've read this, so I really don't know. But I think this sounds like exactly what you're talking about, that we missed an opportunity to get some money out of villain 2, and villain 1 is going to soul pot. We'll see. Villain number 2 shows 6 of clubs, 7 of clubs.
Yep.
Small pair and a busted flush. Flop bottom pair and a flush draw, and I'd allowed him to look at 2 cards for free. Yes, you did. Villain number 1 tabled 10 of diamonds, jack of diamonds.
Boat.
Flop 2 pair, turn to boat.
Ugly. Get it all in when you got the nuts, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, And his next sentence was, looking back, I wonder if my biggest mistake was not shoving the flop raise.
Absolutely.
Well, Frankie, you're halfway. Identifying the problem is halfway.
I'm Frank T, and I have a problem with getting it all in with the nuts. Really, you should, though. You really should have gotten it all in with the nuts.
And, yeah, he continues to say, I had the nuts, and then I'm pretty sure villain number two would have called my shove since nearly half a stack was already in. I would have won a side pot of 260 and actually made $25 in the hand instead of losing $100. This all sounds kind of familiar, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Once the pair board paired on the turn, I backed down when villain number two checked behind and realized he couldn't have the boat or he would have bet it. He was still drawing, but it's too late to get any value out of him once the river blanked out. If I had been in a position, the decisions would have been so much easier. That's what I said at the very beginning of the hand.
Yep. You're right. You know, and like I said, that hand was a... It all depended on the table, whether or not I would play that hand. And I just didn't get enough information about what the table was like. I knew what the villains were like, but there wasn't enough people. I didn't know about everybody else at the table. If they were limpy, I might have limped. But generally, I'm folding that hand or raising with it. But you were right. You know, if you knew it was a limpy table, I'd limp with it in a cash game and get that flop for free. And then you would have made even more money because you had a lot more people probably limping with you, and then, you know, you would have had more people in the pot. So, yeah. Too bad.
Yeah.
Sorry, Frankie.
Yeah. All right, Frankie, we recently gave you some swag, but I'm going to remind everybody else, send your hands of the week and mailbag questions and call with Flores to podcast@antiupmagazine.com. And if we use it on the show, we'll send you something absolutely fantastic, like a classic tournament dealer button from tournamentbutton.com, which offers a variety of home dealer buttons with timers built right into them. You can customize them with your own photo or logo and ask about the AntiUp logo version. And don't forget to use code AntiUp when you order to get free shipping.
All right. I'm glad the plane didn't crash for you, buddy.
Me too.
So you can report on your trip. I'm Chris Costanza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the table.
AntiUp is a production of AntiUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AntiUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AntiUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.